The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello and welcome to Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. I'm Ian Stone and we're joined this week by Amy Lawrence and Art DeRoche. Good morning, guys.
Hiya.
Sorry. Hi, guys.
Are you with us, Art?
I'm with you. Sorry, that was my bad.
Okay, this is what happens when you work with teenagers, Amy, you see. Just got up. Hasn't it been nice? Hasn't it been nice not to moan about Arsenal for a week? Don't you think? It's been a pleasure. We've had the internationals. I know I watched about 2 minutes of the England game. I don't know about you guys, but it was just nice not to have that grumpy feeling on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. All right. Well, anyway, I should remind you, you can get a third off The Athletic right now because you listen to this podcast. Just visit theathletic.com/Arsenal and you'll be able to read everything that our Amy and James McNicholas are working on in full. Now, I suggested beforehand that this podcast really is about hope because really that's what we've got at the moment. Well, it is, isn't it? Let's be fair. We're not really looking at great achievement right now. Bukayo Saka turned 20 at the weekend, had a lovely party in front of 70,000 people against Andorra, I think it was. Was it Andorra? Yeah. Not that I was paying a huge amount of attention. A couple of assists and a goal in the 85th minute. So before we start, we thought we'd ask, who's the last Arsenal teen sensation you invested in fully in on? Amy, we'll start with you.
I'm not sure if it was the last one, but it's definitely one that I remember feeling completely blown away by, and that was Abu Dhabi. And I remember being sent over to Belfast to watch an England v France under-19s game many moons ago. And there was this player in the middle of the pitch for France. And I know it's a kind of cheap sort of comparison thing to say, but you couldn't help but be struck how much he looked like Vieira. Obviously, there's a physical resemblance. They have some similarities there in their build and even hairstyle as such. But the way he played and, you know, having the capacity to kind of eat up ground, he was absolutely box to box, winning tackles, spraying the ball about with that kind of great technical sort of accomplishment where he could produce a sort of short and long range passes and progress the ball just, you know, really quickly up the pitch, either by a pass or by kind of the way he moved with the ball. And I just thought, oh my God. And at the time he was still playing for a team in France. And I just remember coming home thinking, Arsenal, I've got to sign this player. So I was so excited when they did. And I really went round telling everyone, this guy's going to be unreal. And I wish he was, because he could have been unreal, but for, you know, horrendous luck with his body and with injuries. But yeah, that was the last time I kind of thought Arsenal, or maybe if it wasn't the last time, that was a recent time when I thought Arsenal have stumbled upon potential unbelievable greatness.
Yeah, let's get it right, by the way. It was obviously bad luck in the later part of his career. I mean, I guess you could say it was bad luck to be on the same pitch as Dan Smith, who was playing for Sunderland at the time, and who did essentially a physical assault on him and killed his career. Yeah, never to be forgiven or forgotten, that one. Art, what about you?
Yeah, I think as, I guess, a card-carrying member of Hayland FC, I think there are a few names that kind of popped up straight away, but two stand out. And I think the first one is Gedeon Zulalem. You remember back to, I think it was the Emirates Cup 2013 against Galatasaray he played. And I was in the East Stand, and he just seemed so comfortable on a pitch with professional players, even though he was like 17 at the time. Amazing control and amazing technical ability. And I think he went on to make his debut that season against Cardiff in the FA Cup. But again, he's kind of a similar one to Diaby, although he's probably not near in terms of success, in terms of his career, just with luck and injuries. I think it was a very big, I think it was a knee injury in the 16-17 season, which was the one that pretty much ended his time at Arsenal, and he spent pretty much around 18 months trying to recover from that. He's the one that sticks out. And then also, I think I have to mention Jeffrey in Adelaide as well, because another kind of Emirates Cup player who everybody was convinced was the one. Very tall, but still very technical. And I thought that he was 100% going to make it at Arsenal, but that wasn't the case. He was moved on to Angers, and now he's at Lyon. So those are the two that kind of stick out in my mind. And I'm not surprised that they're both midfielders of the Emirates era.
I'm just, as you were talking there, I had a quick look at Wikipedia to see where Zelalem is playing now. And he's had an unbelievable career in the range of clubs that he's played for. And before joining Arsenal, he played for teams called Bethesda SC and Olney Rangers. And since Arsenal, he had a few loans, and one of which to a team called Swope Park Rangers, and is now at New York City FC. So good luck to him. But I it's one of those guys that you think, oh yeah, that suddenly you hear the name again. And but every now and again, his name does come up, because like when we're in the car with the kids on a long journey or something, or where, and we play a game which is like A to Z of footballers or things like that. So when it comes to Z, sometimes when you're the last one to get your pick, he comes in quite handy. It's a good game, actually. It works.
It does sound like a good game. It does.
We could do it on this podcast, because it means we can avoid talking about other things.
Well, okay. Well, let's see if we have to. Okay, let's save that one for not after an international weekend when things are looking up at the moment. I'm going to do an Amy and pick three. Okay, only because why not? One was Patrick Vieira. We've talked about this many times on the podcast. Amy, I love listening to you talk about this, seeing him come on against Sheffield Wednesday when we were 1-0 down, and he was 18. Let's not forget, he was an 18-year-old.
I think he was 20.
Do you know what? He was always 18 to me. Okay, but anyway, he was young. They're all young, to be fair. Another one was Eddie Nketiah against Norwich. Scored two goals, and we're all singing his name. And I really, really had high hopes for him. I love the way he moved. And it obviously hasn't quite worked out. He's still a gooner, and you never know. We thought he might move to Palace in the summer, but it didn't happen. And a third one is for any older listeners. It's a guy called Peter Marinello, who joined us in the very early 70s. And he had long hair, and he was very youthful, I guess. And even from my position of being 7 or 8, when he joined, there were high hopes that he was going to do well, because it was quite a large fee at the time. Might have been £200,000. I don't know. Somebody will tell me if that's correct. But it didn't work out. And it's always a bit sad when they don't work out. One player who has worked out, of course, is Bukayo Saka. As I said, turned 20 at the weekend, and scored for England, another goal for England. Seems to be universally loved. Amy, I'll ask you this. Adonis is just, our producer just said it was £100,000. Okay, fair enough, for Peter Marinello. Still, it was an enormous amount of money at the time. I'm just interested, Amy, do you feel a little sort of proprietorial when it comes to Bukayo Saka? It sort of annoys me the whole country loves him now, because last season he was just ours. And now it's sort of, he's gone out into the wider world, and as someone who is personally driving my child to Glasgow to go to university on Thursday, I feel quite sad about that. And in the same way I do about Bukayo Saka.
I never thought of it like that, but you do raise an interesting point. And let's be honest, in the times that we're living in, having Arsenal players that you love absolutely wholeheartedly and without any conditions or anything, there aren't millions to choose from in of the current squad. But Bukayo is undeniably someone that you just feel so happy to see in any event. I mean, I think if he walked down the road and you walked past him, you'd just be beaming. You know, yeah, he's got that effect on people. And that's just before he even steps on the pitch and is invariably the best player in the team. I think it's notable how, after the summer he had with England, that it's reasonable to expect that he might maybe be taken care of and have, you know, have a gentler start to the season in terms of playing time. But it was like he had to be on the pitch because he's that important. He's that good. And, you know, that is a slightly different conversation, maybe for another day, because the extent to which you look after Bukayo versus the kind of desperate need to play him, I don't know how that one's going to pan out. And when you look at history for examples and of what can happen, there is no clearly defined route that you take, because on the one end of the spectrum you maybe have a Jack Wilshere, who obviously played a lot when he was very young, put a big load on his body and struggled, and on the other side of the coin you look at a Rooney or Ronaldo or Messi, who, you know, came in, or Cesc Fabregas, who we should have mentioned with the young player conversation at the start, of people that you saw and went, oh my god, and all of those players have been able to, you know, sustain amazing, consistent and long careers, despite being pretty much good enough to play at 17 and never out of the team. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how it goes with Bukayo. And obviously we all hope he's got that combination of luck and looking after his body that enables him to just fly and fly and fly.
Well, exactly. He's younger than following Balogun, isn't he? I mean, it's sort of ridiculous to think this, what he's achieved. I think on our little WhatsApp group, it was posted a number of games played before he's 20 years old. There's only a couple. I think Cesc Fabregas, maybe one others above him. What he's achieved is amazing. But as Amy said, does he need looking after?
So personally, I was concerned, say, back end of last season, and considering he ended the year as Arsenal's second most used outfield player, I just was almost put in a position where I had to be concerned because of those memories of, say, Jack Wilshere a decade ago. But Amy does raise a very good point in terms of players who have played very young and still gone on to have very good careers. And Cesc Fabregas is probably the closest one to Saka in terms of Arsenal examples. So I do think that going into maybe the winter months, that may be where we can see more respite given to him, especially without European football. That's going to be a major benefit, I feel. But even in the opening weeks of the season, it just felt, yes, Arsenal need Bukayo Saka on the pitch, but I was still quite hesitant to see that happen just because of how much football he has played before he even turned 20 the other day.
Oh, sorry to jump in, but when exactly can we rest Bukayo Saka?
League. He's our best player. We can't rest him at the moment.
We can't. You'd say we got Norwich at home at the weekend, and we will talk about that. We need to win that game. If we need to win a game, we have to have Bukayo Saka on the pitch.
Yeah, and I understand that. I think that now we're in a position where he has to play. But say in a few months, maybe, when hopefully...
when Arsenal are 16th.
When Pepe's more consistent. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, when other players are more consistent. Hopefully, he can have a bit of a rest because he is still only 20 years old.
I'd say take your rest in the next couple of days, Bukayo, because you'll be playing till May. And hopefully, you never know. Maybe other players will step up. Emil Smith Rowe, by the way, is the other one we love unconditionally of the players you're talking about.
I think it's nice that they've got that song that brings them together in harmony.
I agree. What's his best position, Amy?
You've stumped me. I think you've thrown me a googly there, Ian.
I'm wondering what you think. I mean, I love him playing where he plays at the moment, but I also like seeing him play as a fullback and getting forward as well, because as we've seen at Liverpool, when you look at Trent and you look at Robertson and the number of assists they provide, they are two of the most dangerous players that Liverpool have from that position. And I sort of feel like Bukayo
could
do a similar
players
role.
Going forward are marginally more effective, let's say, in terms of numbers. So
yeah.
I think that the question is that until Arsenal are in a position that they have enough forward players who are delivering in terms of goals and assists consistently quite high numbers, the greater need is for him to be playing further forward, I would think, because he's affecting the game, he's making things happen, he always takes responsibility, he has that capacity to, in a kind of split second, change the dynamic of the game, change the pattern, raise the levels and the danger, and that is, that quality is absolutely vital for Arsenal at the moment, as high up the pitch as you can get it.
Art, do you have anything to add to what Amy said? Does he have to play further up the pitch?
I think yes, but I wouldn't say he should be, say, restricted to one area. I think he's a player that can float around quite a bit. So it's quite similar to Smith Rowe. He can pop up on the right, pop up on the left. And he, at some points, he's even proven that he can play in that kind of number 10 space. So I'd say... probably further upfield is best for Arsenal and I guess for England as well. But I wouldn't want to just pin him down to one role, say right wing or left wing. I think he could just cause havoc wherever he is. So I wouldn't be worried wherever he is, as long as it's just behind the striker.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Bukayo Saka is obviously the shining star amongst the young players at Arsenal, but we have quite a few young players, and that is a clear strategy on the part of Arsenal. Edu was interviewed by Jeff Shreves for Sky. Amy, you wrote a piece on this. I mean, it was quite reasonable what he said, wasn't it? That the club have basically gone for a new strategy because the old strategy is not working.
Yeah, well, I think what he was trying to get at was looking at a longer-term strategy as well. You know, that I think Arsenal had been caught up in sort of quick fix itis for quite a long time. And that didn't seem to give them the foundation they needed to do something, you know, in terms of serious progress. So I think Project Youth, in the same way that it was a very logical thing when Arsene Wenger famously first tried it after Arsenal moved from Highbury to the Emirates, it feels, again, when you're in a position where the pressure is on and you can't exactly go out and spend mega bucks on fully formed, almost guaranteed, ridiculously good players, because there's so much work to do to the squad. The idea is see if you can just buy that potential while you can afford it. And, you know, you have to hope in this case that Arsenal have made enough of the right choices. You know, you can get incredible value from players who are on the way up if you choose well. And, I think there's two things that concern me slightly for this strategy. And I think I'm all for Arsenal doing it. And I think optics-wise, if Arsenal are picking some of the players, I thought it was interesting in the interview that Edu kind of almost spelled out that some of the players were brought in to be backups, which I was surprised about slightly. So he kind of indicated that Sambi was there to, you know, to take over when Xhaka and Partey are not around as first choices. That was an inference, really. And I thought, maybe he's bright enough that he should be challenging on an equal footing with those guys, especially as midfield has been a problem. And similarly, Tavares being there very much as a backup to Tierney. Again, is there possibly a scenario where maybe they both play, or rather than just him having to kind of wait for opportunities if Tierney's not available? And Ramsdale and Leno was the third one where it seems that, you know, the selling point is here he comes to kind of bed in, take his chance when there's an opportunity and see what happens. But I think that people will buy into it much more if those guys are given chances to play more and see what they can do, rather than necessarily seeing some of the players, a Kolasinac given a game or a Cedric given a game, to use certain examples. That's where people will back the project.
I was going to ask Art about this. That, do you not think Arteta lost a bit of connection with the fans when he didn't play the youth and was only then really forced to by injuries to key players?
Yeah, I think West Brom away, he went very strong, and he's done that traditionally in cup competitions. So Carabao Cup last year and the Europa League last year and the season before, where he hasn't really rotated. And I think that's something that fans have become accustomed to, especially in the Wenger years, where you got to see basically those teenagers who we mentioned earlier. You'd see them make their debuts in, say, the League Cup. They'd get minutes in the FA Cup, but that hasn't really been the case under Arteta in the Carabao Cups. And I think I asked him whether the draw against Wimbledon would give, I guess, more of a chance for those maybe younger players to get minutes. And his answer was that, well, I've been playing the younger players. And when you think about it, Bukayo Saka's 20 years old. Emile Smith-Rowe's just turned 21. And those are two players who are key to what Arsenal are doing at the minute. And you see his point, but also you just get why fans are frustrated in terms of, yes, there are players who have been signed, like Lokonga, who offers something that, say, Xhaka doesn't in terms of mobility, and what Elneny doesn't in terms of getting the ball forward very quickly.
Forward passing, yeah.
And you just can't help but feel those frustrations are very valid. So I do agree with Amy in the terms of he probably is going to have to play those players a lot more to get more goodwill from the fan base.
They also might be more successful. We don't know until we try them.
Well, no, but you can't play an entire team under that age, can you? I mean, I'm looking. James did a tweet the other week where he said he named a team of Ramsdale, Tierney, White, Gabriel, Takahiro, now Partey, Lokonga, ESR, Odegaard, Saka, and Oba. And he said, I'm sure there are plenty of fans who would like to see that team take the field. Is there enough experience there, Amy? And another question, can we rely on those experienced players? Because one of the things you said in your piece was that that's the harder part of all this. When he named the five experienced players, which was Leno, Lacazette, Aubameyang, Partey and Xhaka, I think a lot of people went, can we rely on them to bring the young players through? We're going to have to. It's the actual answer to that.
Again, looking back to when, you know, sort of the Fabregas, Van Persie, Nasri, Clichy, sort of that young period, Project Youth Mark 1, if you like, coming through with Arsene. Funnily enough, some of the experienced players around there weren't great either, I have to be honest. I had a look when I was writing the piece and you think, oh, goodness me.
Some were, though, weren't they? Some were really good.
Yes, some were really good and some were, But the other thing is, okay, you're relying on, when you've got that mix, you're relying on the, you know, older players. You're hoping the older players are going to be made of the right stuff to be helping the youngsters along as well as helping themselves in the game. And in the situation that Arsenal are in, it's difficult because obviously the experienced players have got to focus on themselves in their own game too, because this is not a relaxed situation. This is a pressure situation. But they also had a manager behind them, and who was very, very well schooled in all the minutiae of bringing young players in and how to manage situations, how to help them, how to make them feel positive, how to give them the right time on the pitch, the right time off the pitch. You know, Arsene was really, that was one of his genius strings to his bow. He did it so many times. And again, there, I think there this is a huge test of what Arteta is made of in terms of his human management, not just his football management. Because it's not just about coaching and about picking players and strategies and formations and giving instructions. This is about bringing in, you know, a variety. Six new players have come in who are all, as everybody knows, under the age of 23. That brings a certain hunger and desire and enthusiasm and desperation to do well. But they need to feel that they can, as smoothly as possible, integrate into the team and try and do well. And that really is on Arteta. So if he pulls it off, and let's be honest, if you've got six signings coming in, how many out of the six are you going to look back on in 3 years' time and say, amazing, they were totally worked out how we want? It's not going to be six in all probability. It probably won't be five. I think if 3 to 4... turn out to be really good Arsenal signings in a few years' time, that's a fairly good return.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, isn't it? If let's say half of them come through, that would be pretty decent, wouldn't it? That's £75 million worth of talent, essentially, that has worked out.
Yeah, and considering they're all very young, even if they don't go on to be those Arsenal starters in a few years, they're still young enough to have sell-on value. And I think that's one of probably the most important things in this, because as we've talked about at length before, especially in the last few years, Arsenal have been quite bad at selling players. So when, I guess, this cycle comes to an end, and if those players haven't stepped up as, say, Mikel Arteta and Edu would have liked them to, then I think moving them on, there's probably a greater chance of doing that with these players, with how young they are at the minute.
That was something you mentioned in the piece, Amy, that if you are paying a premium for players like, say, Ben White, but they're on all the players are on much lower wages, so therefore it'd be a bit easier to shift them if things don't work out, which was something that Arsenal didn't seem to give enough thought to maybe in the past 10 years.
I think they're just trying to tidy up the wage bill, like, overall. These guys are not coming in on buttons, but on the same token, there's room for growth. If they're very successful, they're going to be rewarded in the same way that Bukayo Saka, you know, the younger players, Smith Rowe recently, they're getting new contracts because they deserve it, and you need to give them those new contracts to make them better paid. Everybody knows the market rate for top footballers in terms of wages if you were in the game. You know, if Saka goes on England duty and is chatting away to Mason Mount and Calvin Phillips and Rice and all the other young guys in that squad, they all know what's going on out there in the world for the top players. So, you know, you can bring in a Tavares or a Sambi at probably, you know, not too bad wages by the standards that some older players maybe on bad deals are from the past are earning. But if they prove to be really successful and fantastic, they're going to need a better deal. And that's what you want. That's great.
OK, which brings us to the last question while we're discussing this, really. And I want to ask both of you this. Art, first things first, how patient do we have to be? What sort of progress? I mean, I'm sure there are internal targets that the club would want to reach, but what sort of progress do you want to see in, say, the next 6 months, a year, that will convince you to, sorry for want of a better phrase, trust the process?
I think my, I guess, expectations, I'll call them, haven't really changed from before and after the Edu interview. I think going into this season, most people following Arsenal would have expected them to at least get into the Europa League. this season, and that hasn't changed for me. Even though they've started the season poorly, I think there's still enough quality in the squad for them to push for at least the Europa League. And then we see where we go from there. I think the fact that probably one of that Edu didn't give, I guess, a proper tangible target for this season in the interview maybe struck some fans the wrong way, which is understandable. But yeah, from my perspective, I think Europe is the minimum that is required.
Well, I would agree with that. Amy, would it be Europe for you, and also maybe a clear playing style that we can get behind?
Asking for both would be great, but even one would be helpful.
Yes.
I think it has to be better than last year. There has, if you've spent 150 million quid, whichever way you chose to spend it, whether you chose to spend it on six under-23s or whether you chose to spend it on two, you know, mega signings, there has to be an improvement on last season.
I mean, actually, one more thing. Can you ignore the present then, at the moment? Amy, I'll come to you first, because, you know, we're bottom of the league.
What do you mean,
three games,
no.
Well, can we? Well, basically, because you're bringing in players for the future. We have the youngest squad, certainly youngest starting 11 in the Premier League, if things work out. But we are currently bottom with no points from three games and no goals. Can you just say, "Oh, we'll let this," because Edu hinted at it, basically saying almost let this season go because we're building for the future.
Well, obviously you can't. I mean, we're. You know, we are existing in the present. We can't just pretend that there's some kind of time zone thing going on where we go into through some portal into an alternative universe where what's going on right now doesn't matter. Nah, I'm not buying that. I think people who are going to go to the Norwich game in a few days' time or are going to watch it from wherever they are in the world care about the next game. Part of being a football supporter is that it's part of your everyday routine in your thoughts. And while you can be understanding that the present might be hard because they're working towards a slightly longer term vision, you can't just pretend that what's going on right now is not going to matter deeply to every single individual who cares about the football club.
No. I mean, Art, I think that's pretty much summed it up, isn't it? We want the future to look bright, but we want results now, is essentially what football fans are like.
Yeah, well, for the future to be bright, the results have to be there now. So it plays hand in hand. Yes, you can put, I guess, add context to the present, but to make it more understandable, as Amy said. But yeah, you can't just, I guess, brush it aside as if nothing's happening.
Right. So context would be if we draw with Norwich, but let's say Takahiro looks good if he plays, we'll go, okay, that was only a draw and we still got 1 point from four games, but the fullback looked like it might work out. I can see how difficult this might be in the next few months. We'll take a break there. When we come back, we'll talk about Arsenal beating Chelsea 3-2 in the ladies, the first game of the season. Fantastic. And we'll look forward to Norwich briefly as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Ian Stone here with Art de Rocher and Amy Lawrence. Arsenal 3, Chelsea 2. Not a result we would have expected to see in the opening game of the Women's Super League. Art, you wrote a piece about this and about how well they played. One thing that stood out for me was the way that we got in behind for the first goal, Viv Miedema. And it was clear strategy on the part of the coach to do that, to draw Chelsea up the field and then hit them from behind. Sort of a bit like Chelsea did to us in the men's game.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that's something new, because when You look at the league game last season, Arsenal's goal came from going wide to Miedema, and then she actually assisted Beth Mead that time rather than scoring herself. But I think that strategy was very clear with, say, Katie McCabe, left back, Iwabuchi, who was on the wing but came inside to, I guess, create that space for Miedema. And they just kind of worked that, I guess, what formula, I'll call it, for a lot of the first half. And then you saw as the game went into a different stage very late on, they just kind of almost parked the bus in a way, I'd say. Again, very Chelsea-like, if you want to call it like that, to hold out for the win. And I think, yeah, over the course of the summer, they've been very clear in their plans for, I guess, the post-Joe Montemurro era. And that clarity has helped them, with that opening day win, but also just in terms of having a much clearer strategy from top to bottom. And that, I guess, the Emirates was the stage to prove that, and they did. So, it was a very good day at Emirates.
Amy, I love watching Ian Wright when he tweets about Viv Miedema's movement. He absolutely loves watching her, and he said it's elite level football that she's playing. We're very much relying on her this season, aren't we?
Well, she's one of the best out there, isn't she? I had a conversation with a few youngsters recently, and they were debating whether or not she could play in the men's team, which I thought was quite really? Interesting. And she's so good that I think I'd be quite confident that she would be having an impact. I agree. I just find, I don't know, it's such an easy thing to do, and you should probably think more clearly about this. But, you know, having been lucky enough to watch Dennis Bergkamp throughout his career at Arsenal, of course they're both Dutch and play in similar positions, I do find every time I watch her, she just does little things that just spring these little reminders of Dennis, because her touch and her movement is so clever. I can't think of much higher praise than that.
Yeah, and Art, signing Tobin Heath, a World Cup winner and a gooner as well. That is, we were talking about how, you know, the men's team are going for Project Youth. This is a statement signing at the other end of the scale, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's really major. And I think one thing that's been clear with their, I guess, recruitment since Jonas Edvald took charge, they're targeting areas that, he's targeting areas he knows he needs depth in. So over the past, 3.5 years, Arsenal have had quite a small squad, which has benefited them at times because they have very versatile players like Beth Mead, Caitlin Ford. But also when injuries hit, it has caused them major issues. So Tobin Heath comes in as another wide forward, as is, say, Nikita Paris, who was signed from Lyon, and Manu Iwabuchi, who came from Aston Villa. They add to the depth in those positions, which are going to be very, crucial to what Arsenal do, because, yes, Miedema is, the big name, but she also facilitates the players around her, which makes that attack much more threatening, I think. And also the fact that those, wide players are some of the most intense in terms of pressing as well for Edvard. I think that's where you see the recruitment coming in those areas. And I think Tobin Heath having that World Cup and Olympic winners experience alongside Nikita Paris, who won the Champions League with Lyon, that's going to only, take the side to another level in terms of not just football, but the way they think about football. It's going to be a very, very interesting season to see how they develop further.
And briefly, Art, can they challenge? I mean, Chelsea and City are really good. And City, I saw City beat Everton 4-0 and they play some beautiful football. Can Arsenal challenge this year?
I think they can. I said, before the game, I was quietly confident. I'm not saying that 100% they're going to go all the way. But one thing that I think was interesting in the Chelsea game is the approach was quite similar, but also very different in some ways to what they've done under Montemurro in the past couple of seasons. As I think people know, Montemurro is a very, I guess, Arsenal type coach in terms of wanting to have possession and not shirking away from that responsibility. Whereas against Chelsea, Edvar was very, and even before that in the Champions League qualifiers, he's made a point of wanted to make them more structured and more compact when defending. And after the game, he said that he made the conscious decision to just camp out in his own box and let them cross the ball, because he knew, one, they didn't actually want to cross the ball, and two, just stacking the box with Arsenal players was going to make it that much harder. And I think if we see that approach again against Manchester City, and if it pays off, then I think I'd be more confident saying that, yes, there's definitely a three-horse race. But Emma Hayes also made a very good point after the game that she actually rested some of her Olympics players. They came off the bench. So Fran Kirby, Sam Kerr came off the bench, Sophie Ingle as well. They're all world-class players that she could just call upon off the bench. And I think over the course of the season, that fitness, because Arsenal's players pretty much came straight into the side because of the Champions League games, how that affects them over the course of the year, I think that's another thing to keep in mind.
I can't imagine you doing brazen confidence art, to be honest with you. Quiet confidence is, I think, where that seems to be your default. But let's look forward. Let's look forward briefly to the Norwich game, the men's game on Saturday, 3 o'clock. Amy, it feels like an enormous game now. We're going to see some of the new players, I imagine. But a win is just imperative, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think Arteta will be in trouble if it's not a victory. You talk about seeing some of the new players. I think across fingers and toes that Thomas Partey reappear. Getting a tune out of him for a long period without a kick or a problem or an injury will be of huge help to the team.
Like a new signing. Really?
Remember them.
Yes, I agree, though. I agree.
Now, that'd be a good opening question for a quiet week. Who was your favourite ever Like a New Signing?
Yeah, we'll do that on another one. We have to beat Norwich at home. I mean, I'm not going, I've got mates saying relegation 6-pointer, and I'm not playing that game, right? I'm really not. But if we don't beat Norwich at home with Burnley away to come and then the North London derby, that will heap some serious pressure on Mikel Arteta.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other way to put it than just it. You cannot not win against Norwich at home. And that's not trying to be disrespectful to Norwich, but especially given how the season started.
I'm not being funny. This is going to be tense. I think people who rock up think, oh, here come the cavalry and, you know, the season starts here and it's only Norwich, could find themselves bricking it at some point during the game.
60 minutes in, if we're still 0-0, there will be a lot of tension and general anger and angst around that ground, won't there?
You're making me scared now.
I thought you were quietly confident. That's for the women's team.
That was for the women's team.
Let's see how we go, shall we? Let's have a song before you head off into the afternoon. Amy, we'll start with you.
I'll do a song for Bukayo, and I'll pick a favourite birthday song. Not sure it might be his style, but the Sugar Cubes' Birthday.
Okay. Art, what about you?
Considering we're all, I guess, okay, hoping that there's a win on, I think it's Saturday against Norwich.
Yep, 3 o'clock Saturday, mate. That's where we'll be playing for the next couple of seasons. Go on.
I'll go for Bounce by Logic. Just hoping that there's a bounce effect at the carpet and there's finally 3 points on the table for Arsenal.
Lift off. Liftoff is what we're looking for. I'll have Don't Stop Believing by Journey, all right? Because I'm feeling like we have to at this point. We have to get behind them and at least enjoy it for the next few months because, you know, otherwise it's a bit of a chore, isn't it, really? We don't need that. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Art. Thank you to Adonis, our producer this week. I'm Ian Stone. This has been Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Enjoy the weekend.
The Athletic.